Welcome to Wealth Well Done. Together, we'll cover a wide range of important topics surrounding money and the impact it has on our lives. From the sophisticated and highly valuable planning techniques of the ultra wealthy to the commonly underutilized biblical teachings. Together, we'll work to improve our relationship with money and our effectiveness in stewarding it well. Here's your host, Eric Scoville.
Welcome to the 48th episode of the Wealth Well Done podcast, where we lean into the tactical, practical, and spiritual advice to help you do your wealth well done. Last week, we had a discussion around selling your business and some of the discussion points that aren't necessarily talked about quite as often. Most important is the spiritual side of this. There's a psychological side to selling a business. What would I do after I do sell? As well as some of the more tactical sides of this from taxes and how do you avoid giving a significant portion of the proceeds of the sale away to the government. And so this week, we're going to lean into insurance. Insurance is not necessarily the most exciting topic to discuss, but it certainly is very important. And anyone who's gone through a claim will absolutely attest to that. So there's a number of insurances that affect people from a financial standpoint. This is where we lean in with our clients. So I'm just going to go through those. We're talking about property and casualty insurance, umbrella coverage. We're going to look at disability insurance, life insurance, and long-term care. So over the next two episodes, we're going to try to lay out some facts as well as try to give you a better understanding around how those policies work and what type of nuances you should be paying attention to, what you should be talking to your agent about as well. So jumping right in, well, I guess before we even do that, I need to throw out the disclaimer that says that the advice that we're going to give here is meant to be educational. It's not meant to be financial advice directly to your situation. So I would encourage you to talk to your team about this. And I just want to reiterate how important it is for you to have a financial team, whether it's the financial advisor, the accountant, the legal counsel, as we're going to talk about here, insurance agents. It's so important that they know the other people, that know who the plan that the other people are working on. So that way there's cohesion or synergy around what they're trying to do for you. And you don't have these professionals planning in a silo. And if you are choosing to do one of those things on your own, maybe you like managing your own stock account or whatever that might be, just make sure you tell the other professionals there about that. That way, if they have some advice for you, they're just a little bit more on the lookout for opportunities that the person who doesn't spend their whole day working in this industry may not understand. That said, let's jump in. Property and casualty insurance. So this is talking about when we're protecting your home, we're protecting your vehicles or other toys that you may have. And so just to kind of put into perspective, I got some stats here from 2020. 6% of all insured homes had a claim in 2020. 45% of those were wind and hail damage. 23% of those were fire and lightning. And between those two types of claims, that makes up the most expensive claims that an insurer is going to submit. The average fire was $77,000. The average claim on a fire was $77,000. A lot of insurers are stopping selling new policies in places like Florida, where the natural disasters are causing such extensive damage. And it's important to understand that not all natural disasters are covered. So wildfires, earthquakes, floods, and landslides, those are all examples of specifics that inside your policy may not be covered. And if so, there might be a rider. A rider is basically a bolt-on to your existing policy that will give you extend coverage out to some specific instance that was otherwise disqualified. And so every time you have those instances happen, these wildfires, earthquakes, floods, landslides, there are people whose homes are completely destroyed and they have no coverage for it. And obviously, you can imagine the financial devastation that can create. So important to understand what risks your area may be exposed to and make sure you have that conversation with your agent. You'll hear that repeated a handful of times throughout this episode today. Along those same lines, another thing that's important is to assess the replacement coverage of your policy. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what a policy actually covers here. But one of the things that it covers, when we're talking about your dwelling, meaning the home, is the replacement cost. And so some policies have a guarantee where they're guaranteeing that they will cover your home to make it back to the way it was. And other policies just have a set policy limit on this. So if you have if you've got $1 million home, and at least you had a home that you paid $1 million for in 2015, then just by the fact of inflation in general, $1 million of coverage would not be enough anymore. But then you factor in what happened to inflation here the last few years, and now $1 million will not even come close to replacing the value of that home. So as you look at that inside construction, you're probably aware of how much construction costs went up through COVID. And it's not like they've come crashing back down. So those costs have gone up and stayed significantly higher than what they were before. You talk about the just the price of the materials themselves. And so anyways, that just drives up a higher cost on the home. And even if you're buying a home today, you know, if we use that example, you buy $1 million home today, if it were to get, if you were to have a significant fire in there, it's not like they're starting from scratch to build a new home again for $1 million. It might take quite a bit more than that to tear down the structure, to dig out the basement foundation if needed, or something else along those lines to put something back in. And so you typically want more coverage than what the home is worth as it stands in your replacement costs there. And another thing with that is a lot of times you'll see a lender will put on there a required amount of coverage. And again, just because the lender says that that's the amount of coverage that they're requiring does not mean that that's the right amount you should have. So there are, I think last stat I saw was there are 5,900 insurance companies in the United States, and there are a whole lot more agents. What this means here is you're going to have a lot of people trying to compete for your business. And as companies compete with an insurance, the typical device for that is price. And so if you'll just let me quote your policies, just bring in they call them deck pages, your declaration pages that show all the details of your policy. Just bring in your deck pages and let me quote those for you. Seems fairly harmless, but what you don't necessarily understand are the differences in coverage. And so while I do agree, or I do think it's good to, you know, make sure that the premium increases on your policy are staying honest, I also want to warn against you just going for the cheapest coverage and missing out on the type of coverage you actually need. So beware of taking the low price here. I think it definitely pays to go with the premium company when it comes to claim time. Examples of that would be in my previous career when I was working for a contractor that did a lot of insurance mitigation work. We would always see stories of the, or not just stories, we would encounter them with people when they'd have a fire that they were underinsured, that they were, they had $100,000 of coverage, but it was going to cost $150,000 to make the repairs. Or you'd see a lot would be with the basement. And so you'd see a basement coverage where they have what's called one of those riders I talked about, is like a water backup coverage or groundwater. And so a lot of times these policies may have a $5,000 limit on the amount of coverage that they offer inside for a basement, or 5 or 10 or 15,000. But depending on your home and depending on if the basement is finished, the repairs for that, the mitigation, can be extensively more than that. You can easily have a $10,000 dry out bill or cleanup. And that's assuming that it's, you know, relatively clean water, not actual sewage, in which case that price goes up even more. So the coverage that you need in place for your basement is one of these riders that When we have a client who, you know, brings us their pages, that we don't sell property and casualty insurance, but we'll just get on a call with their agent and walk them through, you know, talk to the agent about here's what we're seeing for, you know, for the policy here. Here's some of the questions we have. Help us walk through this. Help us understand why you put these coverages in place and where do you see opportunities for you know, improvement? Where are some of the holes inside there? Just the coverage as a whole. And we had a client who had a finished basement, a nice finished basement, and they had $15,000 of, or maybe $10,000, it was $10,000 of coverage for that from a water backup. And this client had three different water claims in the past for water backing up into their basement. And we asked the agent, how much would it cost to increase the coverage from $10,000 to $25,000? And it was going to be, I think, about $12. And we asked the agent, how much more would it cost? What's the highest amount of coverage you can place on this? And she said, half the value of the home. And the home was a seven-figure home. And when we asked her how much that coverage would be to put that in place, it was $12. And so obviously for a family like this, who's got the means for that, to increase the coverage by that amount for such a small amount of monthly increase there, it was, you know, a no-brainer. And it's just important that you understand when agents are competing for your business initially, if they only think they're competing on price, they might drop coverages there. And so it's just important, you know, if you're a spot where you would rather have higher protection than the extra 12 or 20 bucks a month, it'd be worth you having a conversation with your agent to understand, where are the holes in my policy here? What else should I be considering? Not just to throw in all sorts of coverage and try to see how much you can get your premium up to, but really just to see what's the right amount of insurance that you should have for your specific situation there. Other things to pay attention to, it would be the total. So you talk about the total policy limit. This is the total amount that policy is going to pay. We talk about the dwelling coverage, how much for the actual structure. What about additional structures on the property? So if you have an outbuilding, you know, you've got a $300,000 Morton building out there, well, you need to make sure that is properly covered on your policies there. You'd be surprised how many people have added new buildings here, especially since COVID. They've added new buildings or other structures outside, and they have not talked to their insurance agent about that. Pools, you know, pool contractors have been impossible to get a hold of since 2020, and not every person who put a pool in has gone and told their insurance agent about that to make sure that the coverage has been corrected there. So then inside the policy, you also, they'll talk about what contents. And so contents are basically, the guy I used to work with described this as, if we took your house, took the roof off and shook it upside down, everything that falls out is your contents. So anything that's, you know, screwed into the wall, that's part of the structure, the dwelling coverage. But anything else that comes out of that's contents. So this is everything that's inside your cabinets, all of your clothes, TVs, everything else like that. And even if a TV is bolted on, that's not the point here. A TV would also count as content there. And so your content coverage is typically a percentage of the total dwelling coverage. And so that's something that you'd want to be aware of and think about. Sometimes that just seems like a whole lot of money, and it, you know, of course it's going to cover it. And that might, to other people who might have more expensive collections of any kind, it's important that you talk to your agent about that as well. The deductible is another thing to think about here. I almost kind of want to say gone are the days where the standard deductible is $500 for for homeowners insurance. That has gone up significantly, one, because of inflation, but two, to try to discourage someone to file a claim for a $700 repair, and, or, you know, let's say a $1,200 repair. So the deductibles you see now, you certainly see some, they're still in the 1,000 range, 1,000, 2,000, 5,000. You also see some that are percentage of the total coverage. And so what happens with that, and what you need to understand is, comparing to apples to apples, when, if you're trying to look at price here and you think, well, this insurance is going to cost me $3,000 a year and this one's going to cost $3,500, what you need to understand is what the deductible is, as well as, you know, obviously make sure the coverages are correct for what you need. But you don't want to be kind of caught off guard if you're not sitting on a healthy insurance or emergency fund to find out that you have a 2 or 3% of the total coverage as your deductible there. So again, $1 million home that's got a $20,000 deductible, that's not out of line at all. You see insurance companies using that quite a bit to try to incur, lower the premiums that they pay or that you pay. And obviously, if you have a $20,000 deductible, well, if the average claim was $13,000, you're not filing a claim for a $13,000 issue anymore. And so with that reduces the risk to the insurance company. Therefore, they're able to charge you a lower premium. And so it's one of those things that there's a give and take there, and you need to figure out what's right for you. But don't overlook what the deductible is when you are placing your insurance coverage. And so as you do this, whether it's any of the things that we've discussed or others, it's important for a couple of things here. One, I want you to ask your agent to review your coverage with you. Set a meeting. We're all busy. But you don't need to feel like you're burdening your agent with this, because this is their job. So ask your agent to set a meeting just to review the coverage that you have. And let's go through, policy by policy and understand what type of coverage I have. And when they say things to you that you don't understand, ask them. You've got to be willing to be vulnerable enough to understand. You say that I don't know what that means, and then help have them explain it to you. So it's so much better to let them feel smart, and you learn rather than you being uninformed and just to avoid this kind of fake reality that we create in our head of, I don't want to be embarrassed by asking a question that simple. We have these conversations with our clients' agents, and we just tell them that we're really trying to give you permission to, it's okay if you increase the premiums that we pay some, but we're trying to give you permission to do your job to the best of your ability and your skill set, rather than feeling like you're being handcuffed around price. And so again, a very, very important thing to do with the agent there. So the other type of P&C policies that we should be paying attention to are your auto policies. And so this would obviously be your vehicle, but we also can talk about the other toys. So if someone has golf carts or utility vehicles, anything along those lines as well, boats, those also are going to fall into these policies here that we need to be talking to our agents about. But specifically for auto, are your vehicles here. That what you see there, you typically see some number like a 250,000/500,000. And so what you need to understand with that is that 250,000 is per person, 500,000 is per incident. And so you would want to make sure that the coverage that you have there matches the need and the exposure that you think you have. Obviously, any type of vehicle crash can create a significant amount of medical damage, a lot more than if your car probably isn't worth $500,000, but the human medical bill is likely to be, that's where the opportunity is for that to get significantly higher there. And so so from there, that's where you can see people have $50,000, $100,000 of coverage in this space. $250,000, $500,000 is probably a more common one. We'd like seeing $500,000 or per person, and $1 million total per incident there is certainly a coverage that we'd like to see with our people. But again, you need to talk about that with your agent to help understand what is the right amount for you. For the other policies, the boats and the ATVs and other things like that, they get very specific. And so, again, important to make sure that as you add some of those, call toys or whatever you want to call them, as you add those, make sure that you talk to your agent about that. A, to make sure you have coverage on the unit, but B, to make sure that those are factored into your insurance from the liability standpoint as well. And if you have a liability that you extends beyond the policy, that's where an umbrella coverage comes into place. That's one of the ways that you would use umbrella coverage. So an umbrella policy, you know, might mean that you had that 250, 500 type coverage for an auto claim, and there was additional cost beyond that. And that's when your umbrella coverage can step in and pick that up. It's not meant to be in place of other policies, though. So you can't skip having auto insurance and just count on your umbrella policy to cover that. But what these umbrella policies typically do is they're going to, you'll see a lot of bodily injury, property damage. They can protect you in the event of a lawsuit or landlord liability if you have rental properties. You'll typically see coverages range between 1 and 5 million here. They'll just have a set fee for, you know, each additional million is going to cost you this much more per year. If you're exposed to higher needs of coverage than that, then again, that's going to talk to your agent to get a little more specialized policy. We'll let that be enough for the property and casualty side. This is dealing specifically with what they call personal lines here. These are things not pertaining necessarily to your business. And so business coverage is a whole nother layer of specialty. And that would be something, there are certain insurance agents who focus on that, what they call commercial lines. And so having, making sure that you don't have a person who is only versed in personal lines trying to quote your commercial policy is important there, because it's an expertise inside of this. And so you want to make sure that you have the right commercial coverage in place. And here in a few weeks, we will have a gentleman on who's going to talk to us more about commercial insurance. So we'll jump into the next form on the personal one. We're going to use disability insurance next. Disability insurance is often referred to as an income replacement, meaning here that if you were to have some type of injury or qualifying event that would trigger this, that would keep you from being able to work, then the disability coverage would step in to basically pay the income that you would have received otherwise. This is not just for actual injuries. You know, someone thinks that I'm a carpenter and I hurt my shoulder real bad. Well, certainly that could be this, but also think these coverage cover diseases. They also cover mental illness as well. And so from that standpoint, there's a wider range of coverage there that could cause a policy to pay out a claim. So the way that this is often sold, and it's not wrong here, it's just important that you understand the tactic behind it, is they'll ask you, what's your most valuable asset? And then, you know, you, like a script, say, my home. And then they will come back and explain to you, no, your most valuable asset is your ability to produce income. You know, over a lifetime here, your ability to produce an income should create a lot more total income received than your home. And so then the idea is, okay, well, if you had a money generator, a money generating machine, and it was up in your attic, wouldn't you insure it? And it was, you know, if you make $100,000 a year, then that machine prints out $100,000 per year. Wouldn't you insure it? And of course you would. So why wouldn't you insure your income or your ability to produce an income? And from that standpoint, it's a very good logical question there. But just beware of the sales tactic. So then let's break this down a little bit of what is incorporated here with disability insurance. So you first need to understand that there are group policies and there are private policies. Group policy is something that is going to come from an employer. If someone has more than 3 employees, then they can, and one of them needs to be a non-direct family member, then they can apply for group coverage and get group disability in place. The inside a group policy, which you typically see, and this isn't always the case, but you're typically going to see roughly 60% of your base salary as covered. It's fairly cheap. Whenever we would deal with someone who was a W-2 employee, we would certainly recommend that they at least take a strong look at getting the disability coverage through their employer, because no other private insurer is likely to beat the rate that they get from their group coverage. The benefit, the premium is taxed deductible, so it comes off of their income, but the benefit is taxable. Whereas if you go privately, you pay it with after-tax income, but then the benefit is going to be tax-free. also inside of these policies, you have what are you talk about short-term disability and long-term disability. Short-term disability, you're typically talking about stuff that's 3 months and less. And long-term disability, you're talking about 3 months or longer. The likelihood of using short-term disability is quite a bit larger than the long-term disability. So even though the long-term disability is something that would have a greater a cost to the insured or to the insurer, the price for that per dollar of actual total potential benefit is cheaper because it's less likely that you're going to use it. So that looks like, you need to understand that a disability policy has basically a waiting period. And so you could have this be as little as 30 days, 60, 90. You can have it be 180 days. I think they might even allow them to be a year. And what that does is that says, you know, in the event of a normal one is 90 days. So if I'm putting a normal long-term disability coverage in place, you would say that, hey, if you are still 90 days after the event occurs that's caused this, you're still unable to work, then we can file a claim and start the disability process there. And so that means you're responsible for keeping, you know, covering your expenses for the first 90 days there, you know, AKA back to the emergency fund. So we want to make sure that all of those pieces are factored into your planning. And then you can put this policy in place. The way it's structured is typically, I'm going to start talking more about the private placement now. So So what you're looking at is if you have, you know, 60% of your base income covered by your group policy, then you can typically get to around 80 to 85% of your after-tax income with private, what they call supplemental insurance. So supplement the difference between the 60% of base before taxes and the 80% after tax. And so what we want to look at there is the idea that that base, if you're a W-2 employee, if you're a salesperson, gets a commission, or you have other type of incentives, those commissions and incentives are not likely to be included in your 60% of coverage for the group policy. So we'd want to look at your income the last couple of years, and they would take an average of that to then put that, you decide how much coverage you can put in place. This does get tougher for entrepreneurs, just a heads up. One large factor in the coverage is going to be your line of work. If you sit at a desk and work on a computer all day, that's going to be quite a bit different than if you perform manual labor outside. Obviously, there's a different level of risk there. And so therefore, the whether you can even get coverage or if you can, the premium you pay will be different. So the company will have a table based on a number of different types of occupations, and then they will assign a level of risk basically to that occupation that will be a factor into the premium, but also into the type of coverage. So for a lot of careers that create a higher level of risk, they won't even insure you at all. And so contractors have a big problem with this, chiropractors, other people who have more exposure to injuries are either typically don't get coverage at all, or if they do, they pay a lot for it, and they have a pretty low cap on the amount of coverage that they can put in place. Again, talking about the riders, there are some important riders that you need to be aware of. One is often called own oc or own occupation. This is saying, does the coverage extend if I can do just my job or any job? You think of a hand surgeon. So someone who's a hand surgeon, if they have an injury and they're no longer able to perform surgery, then they can't do their job anymore. But if they can go do something else inside the company that would pay them less money, but they're still able to work, depending on the type of coverage that they put in place, if they use a lower quality disability policy, then they might lose their coverage after a set amount of time, might be 2 years, might be less. Or if they can do any type of work after 2 years, then they're able to, the insurer basically doesn't need to pay anymore because they're able to go work. And just tough luck that you went you know, that you're able, that you have to take that much of a pay cut. But there are policies that allow you to basically make sure that you, if you can't do your job, then you get paid. And if you, one, you can actually double dip on those policies, you can get paid because, you know, you couldn't go be the hand surgeon anymore, but now you can go do some consulting, or you can go do some, you know, some other line of work inside of there. You can go read x-rays or anything else that you want to do and get paid for that. So you can, in that case, actually double dip, and that's totally legal. The another one is what they call, you say COLI, people here talk about the COLI. What we're talking about here is the cost of living. And so a cost of living adjustment here would mean, you know, often you see a 3% or 5% inflation rider. And so that way the benefit goes up 3 to 5% per year. There are others that basically help protect your retirement contributions. So if you were, you know, making $25,000 a year of contributions into your 401k, well, then you can have that insured as well. So that way, if you do lose the ability to work, then they will make a $25,000 a year contribution to your 401k. Another one to be aware of would be like a catastrophic event. So if there's some type of large loss, disability, where you're not going to be able to make a recovery from this, then they'll actually bump up your benefit there as well. So those are some of the more standard riders you'll see here that would cause your premiums to go up, but would, you know, basically boost the amount of coverage you have there. And some of those I would, you know, likely recommend depending on your situation. Wanted to give you some details around what a cost might be here. So I just ran a policy for a 45-year-old male that is going to get basically going to receive $165,000 a year of benefit. So his income's not $165,000, but that's the benefit that we're supplementing here. And depending on those riders that you add, it'd be roughly between $400 and $650 a month of coverage. That is to insure him through age 65. So basically 20 years or declining amount of coverage there. So that factors into the benefit period. You can have a benefit period of 2 years, of 5 years, of 10 years. You can say, I want to be insured through age 65 or age 67. And so again, need to make sure that you understand the details behind what you're actually getting quoted. We got to pay for disability insurance. You have to pay real special attention to the insurer. This one, kind of like your home and auto policies, it typically pays to go with a little bit more of a premium type insurer here. And because not all these contracts are created equal. So you need to understand with my occupation that I have and what the details are behind this. And this would be an important one to actually read your contract. If you have legal counsel, have legal counsel take a look at this as well to just understand what you're getting here to make sure that this policy actually fits you well. Depending on the state, some other types of income that you may receive will affect the payment on this as well. And if you are a professional athlete, performer, or someone who would kind of represent a more of a specialty type case, then there are insurers for that. Most typically, Lloyd's of London is the one who insures those, but there are other insurers who focus in on those type of cases. With that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this week on insurance. And next week, we're going to dig in on life insurance, mostly around life insurance, a little bit in long-term care. But again, just trying to help you understand just what all is important to be looking at when you're looking at your insurance coverage across the board, because obviously can have a large impact on your financial stability. That's it. Have a great day.
Thank you again for listening to Wealth Well Done. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast player, and together we'll continue to improve our relationship with money and our effectiveness in stewarding it well.